Our reading from Luke chapter 14, verses 25 to 33. Now large crowds were travelling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." And this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I'm putting on this stole, which comes from the Philippines this morning. So thank you for your welcome for Phil and I to come here to Murray Alta. It's been something we've been looking forward to for some time, particularly after last Saturday night, that night of murder, mayhem and mystery. Looking forward to reacquainting ourselves with Hezekiah and chastity, huff and puff. I'd like you to thank you for your ongoing commitment towards mission, particularly through your three mission projects this year. So Frontier Services, providing wheelchairs to remote areas, Uniting World Project of the Midwifery School in South Sudan, and support for the Ecumenical Theological Seminary in Baguio City, Philippines. So when I read the verses from the book of Luke about costly discipleship, my first thoughts actually were of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Then I thought of some of the leaders and people I've met in our partner churches. So firstly, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that important German theologian, church leader and martyr. Although it's 68 years now since he was hung by Nazis for treason, his writings, which include The Cost of Discipleship, have made him a well-known name in Christian circles. Back in 2006, Kevin Rudd wrote an article saying that Bonhoeffer was the man he most admired in the history of the 20th century. In particular, Rudd focused on the fact that Bonhoeffer believed that Christianity must always take the side of the marginalised, the vulnerable and the oppressed. This article has been referred to a number of times leading up to the election, as both leaders of the main political parties have turned their backs on the most vulnerable asylum seekers. If you're interested in reading more about this, our Uniting Church President, Andrew Dutney, has written a piece called What Would Bonhoeffer Do, Mr. Rudd? So that I can tell you where to find that if you'd like to follow up on that. But as it's Mission Sunday here today, I'd like us to consider what costly discipleship might mean in one of our partner churches. So to give you a bit of a background, Uniting Church has five partner churches, South Korea, Philippines and Thailand in the East Asia region, And Indonesian West Papua is directly above Darwin, and Papua New Guinea on the other side of the island. People in many of these churches come from places that are largely forgotten about by much of the world. They're pretty much off our radar screen. You don't hear about them in the media. Their leaders have to be pretty courageous people because they face things that we've never had to. Leaders in the Philippines church are a good example. As Christine and John, Phil and I visited the Philippines in May, and Doug and Jenny were there a couple of months before us, I'd like to focus on a few people I've met in the Philippines. People who are living out what it means to be a disciple of Jesus where it can be dangerous to do so. The first slide, please. Bishop Ruel Maritza is the General Secretary of the United Church of Christ in the Philippines, or we say UCCP. He knows what it's like to stand up for his people in a country where people are intimidated, go missing or are killed for advocating for those who are poor and protest against multinational companies coming in, taking over their land. He expresses what it's like to live a life of costly discipleship. Subversives and leftists, communist coddlers, enemies of the state. Thus we've been tagged and labelled, vilified and demonised, branded and marked, placed on orders of battle, put under surveillance, hunted like rats, with threats texted, dozens of clergy assassinated, including a bishop from our own ranks. How do you deal with fear? What do you do with it? We were asked. We would not be forthright and honest if we say we are not afraid or scared. Many times the fear is not for our own selves, but for our loved ones, wives, parents, children, and their future when we're gone. But ironic as it may sound, fear seems larger when afar than when it's near. This is what Bishop Maritza has written. I don't know, but perhaps when fear is near, there's not much choice of whether to cope or not. It's just about getting on with life. Whereas if it's far off, it can seem more unknown or indefinable. Next slide, thanks. So this is Pastor Juliet on the right, Juliet Aguila, National Program Coordinator, Justice, Peace and Human Rights Program, who I've met previously. So there's been deaths in the Philippines. 6 church workers, 4 lay workers, 12 members of the UCCP have been gunned down and murdered by death squads during the administration of the former president, Gloria Arroyo. There's more recently. 4 others murdered, 7 abducted, tortured and detained, 3 harassed and intimidated, while 9 other church workers were taken to court on trumped up charges or placed under suspicion. All these UCC people were accused of destabilising the government, when their work simply focused on addressing injustice and gaining a better deal for the poor. CARA-BATAN, which is the Alliance for the Advancement of People's Rights, indicates that a total of 1,188 people have been executed since 2001. The UCCP is wanting to organise human rights lawyers, advocates carrying out a process involving legal suits against those who carry out these abuses. Because to date, there's been no one who's been convicted of any of these killings. We cannot hear God's cry and do nothing, says a church worker. But this is risky business. Those who care for the poor and who advocate on their behalf are a challenge to entrenched interests and a threat to the status quo. Just a few days ago, I received an email saying that another UCC pastor has been recently harassed, just in the last few days, by men from the military. The UCCP is a courageous church. Pastor Juliet epitomises this in her faithfulness to the gospel, in her commitment to the imperative to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to the captives, to set free the oppressed, to take up the cross and follow Jesus. Next slide, thanks. So in this photo we see Christine, John and I there with our backs to the camera, talking to Echo, the community organiser of a poor squatter settlement, which was built with whatever materials people could find along the riverbank. About 400 families have been moved on from other places. Sometimes housing development companies have brought up the land to build luxury homes. Others moved here because their homes were destroyed by landslides. Land along the river is one of the few places where poor people can find to settle and build a shelter. With news of the recent flooding in Manila and around in the Philippines, we've been wondering what's happened to these people, how they've coped. Don't know whether you can see, but Reverend Andrew Tiver is there in the photo on the right. The Uniting Church minister who came here to Morialta spoke on a Sunday afternoon just a month ago. He and his family have been living in northern Philippines for 3 years. They've just had a break here in Australia and going back for another 3 years. Andy will be working with the Ecumenical Council of Philippines. He'll be based around Manila but travelling back to Baguio. It's just about an 8-hour bus trip every weekend to see his family. Next, thanks. So here's Echo again on the right, the community organiser. He comes from a middle class family and has a university degree, but he's chosen to work with these very poor people and he's receiving a very basic wage. The UCCP has links with the human rights organisation that Echo's working for to support them where people are struggling. Our partner church asks, where is God already at work? And connects with community groups rather than starting their own projects. In the midst of the shocking poverty we saw at this place, we heard some of them say that what they really need is clean water. Hopefully this is a project that we're going to be able to support in the future. The water in the river, as you can imagine, is polluted. Otherwise they have to pay a really expensive price for the water to be brought in. However, they told us the best gift we could give them would be to help them to become empowered to solve their own problems. So after travelling around Manila, Phil and I travelled up to Baguio in the mountainous area of the northern Philippines. So up here in this university city, it's much cooler. In fact, when Doug and Jenny were there, I think it was quite cold.
Wore the same jumper for 6 weeks.
Did you hear that? Doug wore the same jumper for 6 weeks. So next slide, thanks. This is a photo of Luna and Perla Dingayan at the Ecumenical Theological Seminary. So Luna's the principal, Perla teaches there. They train mostly young people for ministry in the remote churches of the northern Philippines. So it's basically quite a poor church, and they have little churches based around up in the mountains. Luna and Perla began the seminary in 1996 as they saw the need for relevant and affordable theological education for poor students, especially those from Indigenous communities. Luna writes, "We literally started from scratch. What we only had then was a vision for the church, which we enthusiastically shared to partners here and abroad. For almost 2 years, Pearl and I had no salary at all. We had to survive with the little savings that we had from our previous work. We had 35 students to teach, to feed and to shelter. Surprisingly, we never starved. Literally, we lived by God's grace." Next, thanks. So this is the seminary where Doug and Jenny volunteered earlier this year, helping to set up a library there. I'm not sure what you think of when you hear the word seminary, but it's usually not sort of a building like this, which is sort of open to the elements in some places, covered with corrugated iron. It's never been finished off. Their partner church in Germany funded the beginning of the construction. They've never had the money to complete it. So any donations from you today will partly go towards helping Luna and Perla do more of this building work there. As Luna says, the Western Church must realise that the sufferings of people in other parts of the world is also their own. It's in the spirit of unity, a solidarity, that the Western Church can make a meaningful and significant response to the sufferings of people worldwide. We know that Paul said the universal church is like a body with many parts. Each part is important. If one part suffers, the whole body suffers. The Western Church is part of this whole body of Christ. So being a disciple of Jesus is costly. There's no way we can earn it. This is what Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote about. I think his writings are well worth reading if you've never had the opportunity to do this. In our society, being a Christian doesn't impact on us perhaps so much. Bonhoeffer made the point that being a disciple means living with God's grace. His grace is free, but the paradox is that it can be costly. It certainly was for Bonhoeffer, who was killed for opposing the Nazis. Being a disciple involves actually giving up or being ready to give up what we have so we're free to follow wherever Jesus leads. I'm aware that the examples I've given this morning are not based here in South Australia. I don't want to infer that discipleship here is not costly. This weekend I read a blog from a minister here in Adelaide, a friend, where she wrote that discipleship for her is costly in terms of lack of financial security, therefore stress, which impacts her health. And this is going to be more and more so in the church as we face sort of ageing and declining congregations. But I think it's different from living in a country where to follow Jesus might mean choosing between life and death. Jesus goes to follow him, even to the cross. There can be no resurrection and new life without suffering of the cross. But we're able to come to the table, going to experience that in a minute, partake of what is offered to gain refreshment so that we can keep going, as there may be difficult days ahead. Then we can go and offer these free gifts, this grace, to those who need it. This is what being involved in God's mission is all about. Amen.